Okay, so Akshav, I'll go to English, but please stop me. If there's any word you don't understand, you're really welcome. It doesn't disturb me. It's an even invitation to explain things more clearly, okay? So don't worry. Just stop me and ask me. I'm going to talk about the refuges, how refuges miflat or miklat, and it's a very, very important teaching inside all streams of Buddhism, of the Buddhist world. And I'll explain in a minute why and how. First thing is, in the Buddhist world, I'm now going to turn everything on its head. That in the world of spiritual practice, what we need to do is get rid of our home. We've been spending time thinking about where is home, what is home, how to find home, how home can be better and more homey. But in the spiritual world, we leave home. And home, firstly, is not about comfort. And this confusion that we have in the ordinary mind is an association of home with comfort, which is still in the world of conditions. Home is 5-star hotels. Someone said they like them, someone else said they hate them. Comfort is not home. And the image that is the most powerful, I think, mythological image of that is the story of the Buddha himself. And that's the story which is a fundamental image in the Buddhist world. The Buddha was a prince, and he had the most comfortable situation. He was living in a palace, he had a beautiful wife, he had everything he wanted, and more than that, his father, the king, had some intuition and prevented him from going out by giving him all the pleasure that he could possibly have. Simply turning this palace into a pleasure palace in order to try and stop the son leaving or exploring or going out. And an obvious thing that happened is that the pleasure palace, the comfort, the palace of comfort turned into a prison for the Buddha. And the only way really he could find the truth was to leave home. And there were four messengers, they're called the divine messengers, or four, I think in the Jewish language we'd call them angels, that came and showed him, gave him the power and the motivation to do this. One was a dead body. A second was a sick person that he saw in the street. He went out at night and he saw, escaped through a back door, saw a dead body. Another time he escaped and saw a poor person. The third time he escaped and he saw a sick person. Each time a huge shock, where he came from his comfort palace and he saw a dead person, a sick person, a huge shock. And the fourth was a monk, a renounced person, someone who left ordinary life completely, left behind and had no possessions, and left all the possessions. Imagine this prince, and he was a prince, coming out from a castle where he had everything, and saw a monk with nothing except the clothes he wore and his back, shining, happy, joyful being. So that all four were shocks. Just one second. All four were shocks for him and gave him what is called samvega. The word samvega is a Sanskrit word. It means spiritual urgency. Okay, spiritual urgency. I mean, I have to learn the truth. I have to go out. I cannot. I will pay the price. Leave my wife. I will pay any price. I have to go. It's this urgency to discover the truth, which he didn't know what it was. He just knew he couldn't. He needed to discover the truth of this situation. This is an intolerable situation. I must say, I talked about this with one or two of you yesterday, about This is the Hero's Journey, which if you read Joseph Campbell, the mythological journey is like this, of the hero of a thousand faces. It doesn't matter whether it's Odysseus or whether it's Jesus or whether it's the Buddha, it's always this kind of thing, going out from the comfort called my comfort zone, saying no longer will I accept that comfort is for me home, because home becomes prison. Home is no longer home, it's prison. It's trapping me, it's suffocating me, chenek. I'm suffocating in comfort and in conditions. And because of that, the name of the Buddha's disciples were the homeless ones. They were called homeless. And the invitation for the Buddha to his disciples was to become homeless. He didn't say come and practice, he said come and be homeless and now practice. And it's a powerful image, which is not just a historical image or whatever, it's an image for us to contemplate how home can be for us a prison. Why? Because of the dependence. It expresses dependence. It expresses some kind of slavery. I know all of us will have children with this, and we can't. It's a hard word to. But it is. There's something in our home dependence which creates a certain slavery, that we are all the time busy with the boundaries of our comfort zone. We talked about this yesterday. I don't want to go into it again. But there is a slavery in being in the most beautiful palace that we can think of, the most wonderful comfort. There is a slavery. It's in a way answer to your question, Lilach, yesterday. You raised this question. It's a very powerful question. When for us is our home a prison? And it's when we are wrapped in dependence of a certain construction and a certain tlut, which then controls our life, so that our life takes on an attitude of, or a quality of, automat, where all the time we're functioning to preserve our comfort. So that turns our life into something automatic and something imprisoning. Ken, you had a question?
Ken, yeah. בעצם המסע הוא אמור להיות מסע רוחני. למעשה, אבל המסע של בודה למשל, כן, הוא לא רק מסע רוחני, כי באמת, כן, יש חברה שלמה שהופכת להיות, כן, נזירים, מודדים, כן, חסרי בית, וזה תמיד מגיע בשלב שאחרי שאתה בעל בית. אתה מסתכל של הבעל בית ואז אתה הופך לסודי.
כן.
עכשיו השאלה שלי, בעצם הרי המיינדפולנס מדבר על זה של להישאר, נכון? להישאר עם כל מיני תחושות. אז למה בעצם אי אפשר להישאר שם וצריכים לצאת למסע?
כן, זה שאלה טובה. והתשובה זה, the answer is a little bit complicated. One answer is, you can lishaer in your home, but you have to be homeless in your home. You can stay in your home, but you have to be homeless in your home. That means to be not dependent and too attached, so that when change happens, you don't suffer. Allowing everything to be totally free inside the constellation of, and this is the direction of 99% of spiritual practitioners in the world. 99% are not monks. 99% have a family. Buddhists, Christians, doesn't matter. They have a family and they do not leave. And you do not have to leave to be homeless. But there is a certain intensity in the homeless life which is a kind of adasof. It is taking it so seriously that the giving really all yourself, 100% of yourself to the practice. And that sometimes really needs you to leave. And the Buddha, the Buddha's case, no half measure at all. He said, I'm going all the way, I'm leaving everything, my new beautiful wife, the castle, my parents, my this, and the wife was pregnant, I'm leaving. It's like a totality there, which is very, very powerful. So that's why people do it, because of that. And plus, some of the practices that the Buddha and the Buddhist world invites you are simply impossible to do at home. There's just too much disturbance. There are certain practices connected with deep concentration which are not possible in society. You really need to cut yourself off in a cave to do them. But they're not necessarily absolutely essential. So the practices for a householder are what we're doing. Mindfulness is right for the householder, but deep concentration is not right. So you have to design the practice according to the situation. So the answer is yes, there are reasons for leaving home, but it's not absolutely essential. And there are many, many enlightened people and stories of enlightened people and so on who have, you know, great, great, great teachers who have families and wives and so on. And it's not a compulsion to do that. But it's a very good question. So I think we understand intuitively that our life, our dependence on the conditions can be a feeling, and the conditions are what we think we need to live. And they include the eight conditions we talked about yesterday. A family, we need love, we need children, we need house, we need money, we need walls, we need masak nasa, the whole thing. Without a car, we need, otherwise so these are binding us. And then we find ourselves in a kind of prison all the time, rearranging the furniture to make us a bit the prison, less of a prison. And we really don't see, after a while we're so in it, that the door is actually wide open. But it's hard for us to go out. It reminds me of my chickens. I have chickens, right? Tanagolot. I feed them every day. They're so used to being inside. I go inside with a bucket of food, plants, whatever I to give them. I leave the door wide open. They don't go out. And if they go out, they kind of go, oh, and they go back inside. The freedom is frightening. They don't see, or the more like they don't see a door. They don't see the door, and it's an interesting image. So where, in that case, what happens through spiritual practice is that it's not that we have to feel homelessness. It's not that we need to be homeless and feel that feeling of that we've been talking about yesterday all the time, but that we find our home is not in these walls, but our home is much, much, much bigger. But we still need a home. There is some place we need to feel the belonging. And the home is just bigger, and in freedom itself becomes our home rather than conditions. There's a quote that says, the foolish fool looks for home all the time, the wise fool finds home everywhere. Still a fool in the sense of the fool on the hill from the Beatles song, you know, sees the world going round. So the foolish fool is all the time looking for home, meaning building home and making, you know, and the wise fool finds everything home. Cannot get out. Home is everywhere. There's a nice little story in the suttas about the Buddha was walking with a friend in the trees, and he heard this hysterical laughter coming from between the trees. And he said to his friend, to one of the monks, go and see who's there. Well, who's laughing like that crazy? And his friend went and came back. He said, it's one of the monks in our Sangha. And why is he laughing like that? He told me, he said, I used to be a king. I had a kingdom, small kingdom. And my life was terrified. I was terrified all the time. I was terrified that there would be a revolution. I was terrified that the people would take my money, my treasure. I used to sleep, and when I did, in my bedroom, there was a group of guards guarding in my bedroom while I slept. I felt every time I go anywhere, people are going to kill me. It was a life of anxiety and fear. I dropped the whole thing, and now I sit under a tree in the forest, I practice, and a nice little ending to this. He said, my mind is wandering like a deer grazing the grass. It's a beautiful image of the way the mind is wandering like a deer grazing the grass. It's a sense, an image there of real freedom and playfulness and ease, and this monk who had nothing. So the monks of the Buddha, by the way, had nothing. They had clothes, medicines, an umbrella against the sun, and
a bowl.
Yes, that's right.
Hello?
No.
Kira.
No.
So, the refuges in the Buddhist world are practices that help us to feel a expanded sense of home and less dependence on attachment or conditions or comfort, our comfort zone. It's blowing the comfort zone wide open to the big open space. And the refuges are three. And they are the most common statement of all, I would think, all Buddhist statements. They're really, if you ask a kid in Cambodia running in the street, what religion are you? He'll say, I'm Buddhist. How do you know you're Buddhist? Oh, because I took the refuge. In Buddhist countries, Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos, Burma, Thailand, same. I was once in Sarnath, more than once in Sarnath, and there's about 50 Buddhist temples in Sarnath of every possible path, and it's North India. And at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, every single temple, in its own language, with its own music, has loudspeakers with the refuges. So there's like the whole town, this village actually, has like 50 different versions of the refuge coming out from the speakers, just like muezzin in the mosques. It's the most common statement, and it's taken in many different ways. I will say it in its Pali language. Okay? Actually, I'll sing it. It goes like this. Buddha Saranam Gacchami. Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Sangam Garanam Gacchami. It means I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. And you have to understand what this means. And I am sure that 90% of the Buddhist world and the kid in the street in Cambodia take it to mean I have faith in, or I believe in the Buddha, I believe in the Dharma, I believe in the Sangha, or I have commitment in, like Mamin Belohim, I have commitment in the Buddha, I have commitment, so on, and statement of even identity. But it's very, very clear that this isn't the real meaning of I take refuge in the Buddha. And the reason is very simple. The word Buddha doesn't mean a person. Buddha means the awakened mind. Bodhi means mind. But the word Buddha means awakened mind. His name is Gautama. It's nothing to do with Buddha, that's not his name. So, what does it mean? I take refuge in the awakened mind. That becomes much more interesting. Refuge is miflat, miklat, or home. It's very clearly defined as home. It is not, I am practicing the awakened mind. In this particular phrase, the most common phrase in the whole of the Buddhist world is, I take the Buddha, namely the awakened mind, as my refuge, my miklat, miflat, my home. So where's the awakened mind? It's here. Where else can we find it? We can't find it there. We can't find it in the walls of our home, of our dira. It's here. So in other words, it takes the whole thing to another dimension. The real home, and the only real home that exists, is in the awakened mind, which exists here already. Needs to be uncovered, needs to be practiced, needs to be looked at, but there is an awakened being inside here, an awakened, the consciousness itself. Because there's nothing wrong with consciousness. Consciousness is just knowing, power of knowing. We have problems with the content of the consciousness that tells us all these narratives that disturb us and makes us suffer. But consciousness itself is like water, like air. Nothing wrong with consciousness. The power of knowing, power of connecting, power of being, power of... So in there is home. And it's it's a very abstract home. Feels very abstract. How can I take consciousness as a home? Can't be a home. But if you think about it a little bit, it's practice, taking refuge. It's not something that you just have to say it and it happens. But if it's for us a kind of a message that we allow to circulate in our life and in our mind, like a kind of virus that changes things. And sometimes it's these kind of messages that do all the work. You can go to retreat after retreat after retreat, but actually what happens is a message like that comes in and says, pay attention, and it changes your life. And it's this kind of message, that's why the refuges are so powerful. This kind of message works when you're asleep. A sense of, the only real home I have is in consciousness itself, in the Buddha nature, the teva shalhat toda atzmo. Power to know, power to be free, to be just, the consciousness is free, awareness is free, it's just flowing. Another way, an image that we can look at it is the womb. Harechem, and this is a message gam. It's in the Tibetan tradition a lot. They use this word womb, garb. It's in the Tibetan. Now, don't ask me anything about the Tibetan world. It's not my path. But it's a very nice image of the Buddha nature. Is womb-like. Namely, it's empty, but there's a potential for everything. Potential for life. Source of life. But the womb itself is empty. It's a generating power. So the same with consciousness or Buddha nature. It's a generating power. Doesn't have any content in it, but it's generating power. So it's important to see this spiritually, and not turn it into dependence. I don't think it's wise to go back to what, as I say, 99% of the Buddhists in the world would do with this and say, it's I believe in the Buddha. Because then we're back in, okay, I believe in God. Sada, you can believe, you believe in God. But we're talking here about something, a process which is a transformation process of the way we are with our life, and especially what, where is for us home. It doesn't, by the way, you don't have to be a Buddhist to see home everywhere in this sense. If you take belief in God as practice of the similar way, and many do, then it's like the divine or the sacredness of being becomes your home. You're in the same place. You don't have to be a Buddhist. But the Buddhist, why I think we are here and why I'm teaching this is because the Buddhist path is so well developed and so sophisticated in its way of immediately helping us to practice and to know and to experience these things. It's a very, very well developed path, and that's its value. But it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a Buddhist in order to find refuge in a home, in a spiritual home or ultimate home or cosmic home or absolute home or consciousness, home in consciousness. The second thing, the second home here is Dhamma. Take refuge in the Dhamma. The Dhamma, or Dharma in Sanskrit, Dhamma in Pali, it really means, as I said yesterday, truth. It's also the path. The path itself is Dharma. What you discover on the path, because there's no real difference between practice and your experiences, because your experience is the practice. So the two are together, so there's no sense that there is practice and then there is truth. Truth and practice are very mixed, and it all under the word Dharma. One way of describing the Dharma is really the way things really are. Even if illusion, the minute you see life can be look, life is a dream or illusion, then that's already Dharma. You know, you see that there's illusory, things are not quite what they seem, that's already Dharma. That means that insight is Dharma. But also what I said yesterday. Yeah. Okay. If for you know, I, if by taking 100 milligrams, like I said yesterday, like my experience 40 years ago, taking few micrograms of some psychedelic substance changes a tree into something else, then what's a tree? So I see a tree, but then I begin to understand that if I look at it differently, it's not a tree, therefore what is it? That's already Dhamma. But if you say the world is like it is, there's a tree, there's me, there's this, I have to do, I have to function, this automat, that's not Dhamma. It's not, there's something missing in that insight. It's not really the way things are, it's the illusion. So I don't want to go into truth and illusion now, but the way things are bigger than me, the truth of interconnection is obviously a deeper truth that brings us home. If we see the Dharma, that everything is connected, and somehow we can't be not connected, we are by itself, things are connected. My body is made of the same molecules as the stars, and really feeling that, we're connected now in this room because we're all sharing, there's a conscious space of connection that's happening in this room. The words, the senses, the sensations of being together, everything is connecting us in many different streams which we can't even know, we can't even imagine. But It's happening in this room. There's a moment of connection, interbeing. There is Dharma. So the truth of interbeing is a very important truth. In a psychological language, you could call it intersubjectivity, which I'm not sure I understand completely in its psychological Western way of describing, but it's interbeing is perhaps more the matrix. We're part of the matrix. We're part of the interwoven net of all biosphere, for example. That is a truth. That is a home for us. So you can clearly see that sort of truth really makes us feel at home and really gives us a bigger home. We can feel that home is into the interconnection. In this minute, right now, we're all connected. We're listening to each other. We're supporting each other. We're present for each other. We have a flow between each other of listening and talking and expressing and so on. And that's a home. So therefore we feel at home right now in bigger than me and what I need. Just in a small example. I think that being an island is autonomy and is kind of shlav, is a stage. It's connected to the refugees because refugees themselves are also a stage, are also a practice. Being an island is a kind of practice. It allows us in a way to leave home. If we feel an island, but I agree with you, it's not that we have to be in a box. Being an island is a practice of autonomy.
It's a developmental stage.
Yes, it's a stage in the path, and it's an antidote, really, for our sense of pizur and lost feeling and dependence. So we feel an island, we feel just what we were doing earlier, the practice, being a rock, being with my life, sort of being in my life and not, because dependence on this and this and this and this, I'm going to be happy only if A, B, C, D, house, mortgage, you know, mashkanta, da, da, da. We're not an island. We are out. We're wobbly, we're shaky, we need this, but you know, so it's part of the same kind of process. But here, the refugees are much bigger than the island. And the refugees are like, we are all islands connected under the sea. Actually, all islands are not islands. As soon as we see an island, it's actually connected to all other islands under the sea. Yeah. So the refugees, if we really practice them, understand them, they are bigger than the island. The developmental, spiritual development stage of island is a message which we need to have, you know, but these are bigger.
So John Bam was a Buddhist, he didn't know. No man is an island entirely of
yes,
self,
yes,
part of the
yes, yes, yeah, absolutely, yeah. The third refuge is Sangha, which is for us others. Others. Because no man is an island to himself, so where the refuge is also others. Others on the path, others who we're connected with. Yeah, others, kihila, but it's got a bigger sense. Just like the Buddha has a much bigger sense, so Sangha, right now we can feel together because of our interconnection. At this moment, we can draw a circle around ourselves and say, we are Sangha, right now, because of this interconnection. It's like an agreement to be with each other and for each other. That's our concentration, that's our attention is here, that's our awareness is here together. So we're a Sangha, and we take refuge in the Sangha. We find this is home for us. The Sangha, you could be sitting under a tree, and the Sangha for you would be the grass growing, the tree behind you, the animals crawling. I took off a retreat, a 9 months break, Shabbaton, because they're from January in last year to August. Just no teaching, no responsibility, no nothing, just stayed in Klil and spent a lot of time sitting under a tree and also playing with the grandchildren. But I felt this particular tree became a sangha. And I remember one night I was sitting there, and two kipodim began to play, and they didn't know I was there. So they were playing all around me. I was sitting on a chair under the tree. They were playing in and out, running, chasing each other around the chair under me. The tree was at the back. The sunset was down. There were colors in the sky. Wild plants growing everywhere, and these things, and it just felt like here was a sangha at this moment. This is sangha. I take refuge in sangha. Bigger home. So refuges are practice, or forms of practice in which we find our home, and we find even protection in a much bigger space, less dependent space. And that's where, if you remember what I read before, there is no safety not apart from awakening, not apart from practice. Do I feel, is there any real safety? Because the walls don't really give us real safety. There is one thing that also should mention. We take refuge in the Buddha mind, in the Dharma, and in the Sangha. But the Buddha mind needs to take refuge in us. And the Dharma needs refuge in us. And the Sangha takes refuge in us. It's a two-way process. What does that mean? The Buddha mind needs us. We can't, without us, then there's nothing happening. The truth is not our truth. The truth owns us. The truth is in us, and we're in the truth. When we say finding home, a bigger sense of home in this ultimate sense, the home finds its home in us. It's not we that look for home, it's the home is looking for us too. It's not entirely owned, this process, by me. So the truth is bigger than me. Therefore I can't say, I'm now going to have home in the truth, sort of there. The truth is here, so therefore the truth finds home in me. I find home in the truth. Truth owns me, or I own it. Doesn't, no one owns anything. It's not owning, there's no owning going on here. So it's just to be aware that it's a two-way process. The thing is interconnected. Intersubjectivity, interconnectedness. The first statement that the Buddha made when he became enlightened. It's a really interesting statement for our workshop. He said, I have broken the rafters. Rafters are gamlonim. Is that the right word? Roof beams? Gamlonim? Korotchala gag. I have broken the korot gag. This construction will not happen anymore. I've broken all the constructions. This binyah stops here. And the image he used is breaking the house, which is kind of fitting this talk I'm giving about how home or house for us can be a prison if we define it as what we need and the boundaries. A home has no boundary. We are in a home without any boundary. And the Buddha, as soon as he awoke, the first sentence he made, the first little poem he wrote is, I've broken the Korotgag. The house will not stand up anymore. It's free. There's a freedom. The sense of freedom, the sense of total freedom. So, and still being at home. Why are we at home? Because we can't leave home. Where can we go? If we say that a home is without boundary, then there isn't anywhere else except home. There's nowhere else except home. We are interconnected with the world, so there's only home. There isn't anything else other than home. How do we be home? How do we be out of home? We can't be out of home because home is everywhere. If home is in the consciousness itself, or in the truth, in the existence of the truth of interconnection, itarvut gomlin, he say? Hitavut gomlin. If that's our home, then everything is home. So we can never be not at home. In that sense, no. Again, homelessness, the monks going to homelessness was again a path and a practice. But Endavarka is their homelessness in the ultimate sense. If we really look at it, if our home is refuges in truth, then truth is our home, then there isn't anything else. Then there's no such thing as homelessness, no. There's experience of homelessness. We can experience with our story or narrative, we can experience homelessness because we're human beings in a way lost in samsara. We are human beings here and thrown out of the cosmos into a body and having to make do somehow. But so we experience homelessness. Maybe we, after death, we come back home. Possible that that's our experience of coming home could be when we die. I don't know. I haven't done that yet. But you see. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sure.
There is something that you need. I will tell it to you. Okay?
Ken, pavadai.
Liot yoter liot kshete yotze ma'bayit, v'ata machlit lazov et ha'bayit, lechet l'makom she'ata lo mekir. צריך לבוא בחוויה שלי מתוך מקום מאוד יציב, מאוד יודע מה נניח את הולכת רגל שבעצם ישמור עליך, או מי זה הסנגה הזאת שתשמור עליך. כי הרבה פעמים בעצם אתה יוצא מהבית ואתה הולך לאיבוד. ואז מתחיל הדרמה.
לגמרי.
זה מצב, אני אומרת, זה מחוויה שלי מתוך תרגול רוחני במקום הזה, שהתבטא אחר כך בחוויה הפיזית של עזיבת הבית. שהלכתי פשוט לאיבוד, פשוט לא הבנתי כבר מה נכון לי או מה עובד לי, מתוך זה שהסכמתי לשבור מוסכמות. והיה איזשהו שלב שפשוט אמא שלי באה אליי ואמרה לי בוא הביתה. שזה היה כזה, וואו, הלכתי לאיבוד. ועכשיו אני רואה את זה, תראה, במקום שהסתכל על זה כי מצאתי גם את הבית בחזרה, אבל אני רואה את זה דרך גם עבודה עם אנשים אחרים, ובעיקר אני לא עובדת עם אנשים שהלכו לאיבוד כל מיני מחלות נפש למיניהם, אבל שמעתי כל מיני סביב שאיפשהו בחוויה שלי זה מאוד דומה. זה מישהו שלקח איזשהו סם והלך לאיבוד או מחלות נפש למיניהם, וזה מקום שפשוט מאוד קשה להיות בו, שאתה מסכים כביכול ממודע לעזוב את הבית.
כן.
אז אתה מדבר, אני אומרת לעצמי, הבן אדם צריך להיות מאוד יציב ומאוד באמת בתודעה מאוד ערה ומודע למי זה הסנגה שלו ומה זה הבודה שלו וכל, כמו חזרה בתשובה לצורך העניין, שגם שם אפשר ללכת כל מיני שבילים.
נכון, אני חושב שזו שאלה ממש במקום, ממש שאלה יפה ויש לי כמה תשובות, אבל בקצר, קודם כל דיברנו על יציבות. את השתמשת במילה יציבות. אנחנו יכול, זה לא יציבות, זה לא משהו מן השמיים. אנחנו יכול לבנות בתוכנו יציבות. ובגלל זה עשינו את המדיטציה בבוקר, לדוגמה, להיות סלע, לשבת. לשבת כבר מביא אותנו יציבות. אני פה במקום שלי, אני פה בגוף שלי. זה תחנה, כמו שאת אמרה, זה indeed תרגול, זה לא משהו אולטימטיבי, אבל אנחנו בונים כלים כדי להפוך את ההרגשה של ללך לאיבוד להרגשה שמצאתי את עצמי במקום יותר חופשי ופחות תלות. אז זה התהליך של פחות תלות. אם זה יותר מדי בעוצמתי יותר מדי ואנחנו לא מוכן לזה, אז אנחנו מרגישים אני הולך לאיבוד. אותו הרגשה שאין לי בית וזה וזה, זה אנחנו יכולים להמיר את זה למשהו חיובי וחופשי. אז זה אותו דבר, תלוי אל הציוד שיש לנו בתוך התודעה. אפשר להגיש את זה כהזדמנות חופשי, כמו הבודה. אני מתה לעזוב את הבית ולהיות חופשי כמו הרוח, או אין לי בית. אז אותו חוויה, אותו תנועה, אותו זה, אבל צריך ציוד פנימי כדי. אז אני חושב שזה חלק של החוכמה של איך אנחנו יכולים לנווט את עצמנו בדרך רוחני. To לנווט. So to know the כמויות here. Is to know, to have some intuition of how much freedom we can take. What is the quantity of freedom that we can take? And that's a basic understanding that we have. If we're a bit more klape atzmenu, more of an island to ourselves, we feel more autonomy, we can take more freedom. So we say, yeah, I can do this. Or if we have less autonomy, we say, no, this is too frightening for me. Alech ibud, I will not do this. Nobody's telling you, Amit, you must leave home in order to develop spiritually. Nobody's telling you. You yourself will find the way. I can take this amount of freedom and do this. And this amount, and then next, עכשיו אני פה במקום חדש. אני יכול לעשות ככה או ככה. So it's we're all finding our way. And the כמויות here, the איזון, is important in the spiritual life. And in effect.
הבדל כל כך, אבל כשאתה מדבר ודיברת גם על יציבות וגם על structure והם לא באים אחד במקום השני. זאת אומרת, אם יש יציבות זה לא בהכרח structure. וזה בעצם המקום, אם אני מצליחה להבין נכון, זה בעצם המקום שכדאי לנסות לכוון אליו. איזושהי יציבות שאין לה structure. כי ברגע שאני מתחילה לבנות את הסטרקצ'ר, כדאי לי להתחיל לפרק אותו. והלפרק אותו מתאפשר כי יש איזושהי יציבות.
נכון. אז הדו-שיח הזה, זה דו-שיח שכל הזמן משתנה. That's what the whole thing is moving anyway. So אותו דו-שיח יהיה, אבל בשישה חודשים אחר. אחרי רטריט אחר. או לפני רטריט אחר. זה דו-שיח עם התלות והחופשיות, המבנה וחוסר מבנה, וכמה אני צריך מבנה, וכמה לא, וכו' וכו'. זה דינמיק, וכל הדינמיות הזה אנחנו זז כל הזמן. עם כל החבילה של דיאלוגים בסוג הזה, של תרגול. כן.
זה בעצם, אם אני מבינה נכון, הדיבור שלו על דרך האמצע, אם אני צודקת, שמשתנה כל הזמן. זאת אומרת שצריך כן. פיינטיונינג כל הזמן.
כן.
האישי.
כן. התשובה לעמית היה דוגמה של דרך אמצע. מה שאני אמרתי לעמית היה דוגמה טובה לדרך אמצע, כן.
Basically,
the
Buddha
is
the
Buddha.
The Buddha is the accepting homelessness then is similar to accepting suffering, in a sense.
In a sense, yes.
That it exists, not accepting it.
Yeah, I'm fully embracing it. Fully knowing it.
Yes.
Fully knowing it, it's in and the link between the two is attachment. Hitzamdut. between homeless, the security, the need for security, and the suffering that is created there, is all around attachment. And the refuges invite us to find a home with far less attachment.
תוך כדי ככה שדיברת על העניין של לצאת מהבית, וגם כשנתת את הדוגמאות, זה תמיד גברים שיוצאים מהבית ועוזבים את המשפחה ואת האישה והילדים, וחשבתי על זה במושגים נשיים, מה המשמעות של זה. וחשבתי על זה שבעצם העניין של להרות וללדת זה גם להסכים לעזוב או להיפרד מהגוף לתוך הבית הקיים, ובעצם להסכים לצאת לאיזה דרך לא נודעת, שהגוף כבר הופך להיות משהו אחר, הקיום כבר הופך להיות משהו אחר.
גמרי. Do you want to say something about it?
Yeah, I probably felt it. You felt my body move.
Yeah.
Because I מאוד מרגישה ש זה מה שאני מתעסקת בו כל הזמן, כאילו דווקא המקום הזה של של איך זה באמת לנשים, השאלות האלה עלו מאוד במחקר וגם בכלל בחיים שלי, כאילו אני מרגישה שאני מתעסקת מזה הרבה, וזה מחזיר אותי למשהו שדיברנו אתמול בנושא של הנזילות, של הדינמיות והתנועה. ואני מרגישה ששם זה מתחבר איכשהו לנושא של לנשים, ש היכולת דווקא להביא הביתה את כל התהליך הזה, היכולת של התנועה בין הנתינה והעצמי והתנועה בין זהויות שונות. זה בעצם המקום שבו העבודה הזאת בעצם באה לידי ביטוי. ומציאת הבית בתוך התנועה הזאת. זה הרבה פעמים עלה גם בדברים שקראתי, וזה יש משהו מאוד מעניין, שזה לא במובן של להפחית או לשנות, להפחית מהחשיבות של הדימוי הזה של הגיבור, הגבר שיוצא ומחפש את האמת בעולם, אבל באמת להבין מה הייחודיות של התהליך הרוחני של האישה.
אני רוצה להוסיף שנייה, שאמרתי את העניין הזה, ניסיתי כאילו לדמיין, אוקיי, מה זה לצאת מהבית? אז אוקיי, את רואה את זה בצד המאוד אינדיבידואלי של האישה, אבל אחר כך, מה עם הילד? כאילו, את אפילו דיברת על האזור הזה, גם לי יש שני ילדים. אני חושבת שיש איזשהו תהליך, או אפילו אם מסתכלים את זה אפילו בעולם החיות, כאילו, אני לא יודעת אם נקרא סימביוזה, אצל הפסיכולוגים לא אוהבים את המילה הזאת, אבל איזשהו קשר סימביוטי, שתלות, הרי אומרים שגם ילדים נולדים עם יכולת כאילו מתוכנתת של לצרוח או לפקוד בצורה כזה שירצו לטפל בהם. אין אפשרות בשלבים מסוימים לאישה להגיד, טוב, הולכת מהבית. אין. זאת אומרת.
לא, אני אומרת, עצם זה שהיא נכנסת לדרך הזאת, זאת כבר הדרך החדשה שבה יש בתוכה עובר או איתה, תינוק, או לא משנה בין כמה, בני כמה הם, כבר, זה כבר הדרך האחרת.
החוצה, כאילו.
זה כבר הקיום החדש.
זה להיות בתוך זה. זאת אומרת, לעשות את כל התהליך הזה בתוך החוויה, ולא לצאת ממנה.
זאת אומרת שעצם המוכנות, בין אם זה במודע, בין אם זה לא במודע, להתחיל את הקיום הזה, כאימא שזה אומר ויתור על כל החיים, כל החיים הידועים עד פה. בהתחלה של מסלול חיים אחר שהוא לא ידוע. שיש בו את התלות, את כל מה שאימהות אומרת, שזה התהליך של לוותר על החיים הקיימים שלי כבית ולהסכים להיות ללא. להיפרד מהבית הזה, מהחיים האלה, מהקיום הזה, להתחיל קיום אחר.
אבל בחירה של בית אחרת, אחר, בית שיש בו גם כן איזשהו קשר תלותי מאוד. ואני חושבת שהבעיה שלנו בחברה הזאת זה לדעת מתי לעצור את התלותיות בין קשר של הורה וילד, אבל זה לא מסתדר לי, כאילו, זה נשמע לי, כמו שאת אומרת, ככה מאוד יפה, הבודה, כאילו הנשיא חוזב את הכל, אשתו הערה, בוא נראה אם האישה יכולה לעזוב כאילו את הילד בבית.
There is a very nice rephrase, there's different phrasing of the mythology of the Buddha. One is the one that sort of everyone knows, which in which he left, and his son, he left for 6 years, and then his son joined him and his wife, and they became, and there's very beautiful text, by the way, how he trained his son in the practice and wisdom, and his son became awakened, and his wife also joined him, and they became part of his community. But there's another reading, at least one, maybe more, in which his wife, Visuddhara, when he reached enlightenment after 6 years, she gave birth to the son at the same moment. That she held the baby for 6 years, mythology, and gave birth at the same moment as his awakening. So it's exactly your image there of giving birth as a kind of, that is the awakening, that potential, like everything, in female terms. And you can, you know, see that in the mythology, this carrying, gestation, and birth as a transformative totally female and totally transformative.
אבל העניין הוא שלהביא ילד זה לא הקליימקס, זה לא, זה וגמרנו. נכנסים לאיזשהו עולם של תלותיות.
נכון.
קשר, ובגלל זה, באיזשהו מקום אני מרגישה קצת נורא מתוסכלת, זה נורא אנטי-פמיניסטי
I didn't talk about any male or female difference. The refugees, I didn't say a word that was different for male or female. Only in traditional Buddhism. And traditional Buddhism, like every religion on the planet that I've ever seen, is very male. Traditional Buddhism, traditional Judaism, traditional Christianity, and traditional Islam are very, very male, male-oriented, male-dominated, male priesthood, and male character. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about a process of transformation, and the transformation process is beyond male or female. There is a character that will be female in this transformation process. The female, if you like, quality of it will be different from a male quality, but there isn't, this is just what you said, zihuyot, of different forms, patterns of zihuyot, but it's not any, because we are there, and your journey is different, my journey is different from your journey, but that's all. The journey and the essence is the same, intersubjectivity is the same, the refuges are the same, the ultimate home is the same, it has no difference. And there will be a difference in the way you need to run your spiritual life as a mother from a man that will need to run his spiritual life a bit different. But you will have your dependence and he will have his, he will, of course. And the man will have his dependencies, and sometimes you can, I can, and this is not the time now, but I can give you a list of 20 ways in which a woman with children is better off than a man with a business, or a man with football, or a man with politics, or a man with God knows bullshit. So the dependence on other kinds. So it's not, there is no way that the woman is worse off in this kind of non-religious spiritual journey, the woman is no worse off. It's just different. Different energy to it.
Yeah, but somehow, אני מרגישה שכברת נעמות, כי במידה מסוימת אני גם פתאום מרגישה שהעובדה שבאמת כשמביאים ילד ואתה מרגיש מחויבות, זה לא אומר שאתה לא בגלל מוכנית. זה לא אומר בהכרח לצאת למסע של לעזוב הכל, אלא עצם העניין זה שאתה נכנסת, אתה מרגיש את המחויבות. זאת אומרת,
כן.
זה לא אומר שאתה... זה, הנושא הזה של מסע כאילו של להתרחק, שהמון סרטים גם מטפלים בזה של... הוא לא אלטימט דרך להגיע לקיום רוחני. וכנראה שאישה עושה את המסע הזה באמת, זה ממש היה משהו מאוד משמעותי מה שאמר. שהמסע הוא בדרך אחר, דווקא בדרך של תחושת מחויבות שלקחנו על עצמנו.
אין את האופציה של נזירות. אין את האופציה של נזירות לאישה, לא?
יש.
לא, לא מדברת באיזה. זאת אומרת, אישה שהיא הולדת, זה בין כאילו השאלה שהיה למישהו שהולך להיות נזיר, וזה רדיקלי לגמרי, ועוזב את הכל, ויש לו את האפשרות לגמרי רק להתרכז בדבר, לבין אישה שבעצם יש לה, מהבחינה, ברגע שהיא הולדת, ברגע שהיא נכנסת למסלול הזה, יש לה איזו מחויבות... חייבות אחרת. יש כאן איזה משהו שהוא רק לכאורה, אני חושבת, יש סתירה בין הצורך, דרך שמחפשת את האמת, לבין ערך של נאמנות.
אבל
שוב,
זה חוזר לנושא של attachment.
כן, אבל...
מחויבות ו-attachment הם שני דברים שונים. אני חושבת, את יכולה להיות...
לא, לא מדברת על attachment,
דברת. לא, אני אמרת, את יכולה להיות מאוד מחויבת, ולהבין שהילד זה לא אני, והוא יש לו חיים שלו, ובמובן הזה זה נכון, אנחנו מחויבים ומטפלים ונאמנים, אבל אנחנו נתקעים במקומות שאנחנו חושבים שהוא זה אני, ולכן אם לא טוב לו, אז לא טוב לי, ואם הוא עושה משהו, אז אני חושבת שהנושא של באמת לא לתפוס את זה כמשהו שהוא אני לגמרי, ולהיות תלויה בזה, ושזה יהיה רפלקציה של מה שאני, אז זה המקום שבו מתפתח בכלל מסע, מסע אחר. והוא לא קורה כשאנחנו...
The place that I used to practice most, where I did most of my practice in my life, was a place in England called Oak Tree House, and the teacher was Burmese, and she was a woman, and she had children, and the children were running around in the meditation center. Happily, playful, laughing, connecting with all the practitioners when we were doing our walking meditation. And there was something so beautiful to see these kids just fitting in so well with a life of practice. And I'm just saying that as a kind of memory. I don't think there's anything ultimately different in a woman's path and a man's path, in they're just different mixtures of commitments or of obligations or of relationships or of processes or of energies, different sort of mixtures. You know, the marak is going to be made of different things, but ultimately it's the same. I feel. I'd like to do an exercise before we break for lunch. If you don't mind. Ken, ודאי.
אתה חושב שהאמירות האלה אצל ילדים, אני לוקח מחסה את זה, הן זהות לאמירות של נגיד גבר בן 50? כלומר, האם בעצם המסע הזה הוא גם לא רק תלוי, זאת אומרת, הוא לא רק תלוי באמת במסע פיזי או באימון,
כן, כן.
כשהם עושים את זה, הם עובדים את זה ברמה מאוד קונקרטית, וכדי להשתחרר מזה באמת, אתה צריך להגיע לאיזושהי המשגה הרבה יותר מופשטת.
Look, לפעמים, it's helpful physically to drop stuff, just like Nikui Pesa. It's helpful externally. But in the end, we can do it from wherever we are. That's the where we are in our life. איפה אנחנו נמצאים? אז גבר בגיל 50 יש לו את כל הציוד, if you like, ציוד פנימי, תודעה שיודע דברים. זה הבסיס, זה הרפיוג'. אז זה לא דורש שום דבר. איכויות, כמו של העמית, זה ממש נכון. גבר בגיל 50, אם הוא לא מגיש יציבות בתוך עצמו, מאוד קשה לפגוש את התודעה. הוא מגיש כזה. So, איכויות כן, אבל תנאים מסוימים בחיים, כולנו יש את התפריט שלנו, של החיים. כל אחד יש תפריט אחר. גורל אחר. אנחנו עובדים בתוך זה. לא צריך לבקש מחיים תנאים מסוימים, ורק אז אפשר להתפתח רוחני, באופן רוחני.
זה גם פונקציה של
השאלה. כן, כן, איכויות, זה כמו השאלה של עמית, בוודאי. אני, you know, אפשר להגיד איכויות או הבשלה, כן, אבל אפשר לעבוד עם דברים כאלה. הבשלה זה לא משהו שאו יש או אין. זה משהו שאפשר גם, זה סוג של גמישות שם, או משהו פלסטי, שזה הנושא, אוקיי. אני הולך לרטריט ואני אבקש מהמורה איך אני יכול להתפתח הבשלה. ועמית, איך אני מתפתח יותר יציבות כדי. אז כל אחד יש לנו תיק. אז התיק, you know, that we have on our shoulders is what we work with. זה בדיוק ההכנה הפסיכולוגית. פסיכולוגי רוחני, סלש רוחני, שכל הזמן מתפתח את הציוד פנימי כדי להתקדם. אבל in an absolute sense, no conditions needed.
אני חושבת שאפילו ילדים, יכול להיות שהם מחוברים לזה אינטואיטיב מאוד חזק, לא בהכרח המסגתי.
Oh, sorry. I keep mistaking questions. I thought you said someone age 50.
Yeah, she compared a child to someone
age 50. So sometimes. So sorry if I misunderstood your question. I answered it. Okay, but yeah, but I must say, but in a practical sense, we don't recommend children to do the practices of adults. They probably do. It's helpful for children to do, to be part of the atmosphere of practice. It's not true that all children automatically, because they're often automatically hem kfar bahera, but אפשר לעזור את הילד, הילדה, הרבה דרכים כזה, אבל הבסיס, הציוד הזה, הבסיס, זה ציוד של, גם של חיים טובים, אותו ציוד לילד, אהבה, יציבות, קשר, חיבור, תשומת לב, you know, כל הבסיס זה הבסיס לחיים, חיים, זה סוג של הזנה, אותו הזנה. Nutrition for a child is spiritual nutrition for their journey hala. So we don't accept on our retreats in Tovana, for example, anyone less than 15, 16 years old, 17 years old. We have family retreats, and we do other things with children. We play games with bells, for example. We do ishlanu kominate דברים בשביל ילדים קטנים. סימי עושה כזה תוכניות בבתי ספר עם שפת קשב. יש דברים אפשר לעשות, בוודאי, מיוחד ילדים שמגישים פיזור וכו' וכו'. אבל אפשר לעשות דברים, אבל לא אותו דבר ישיבה 3/4 וצופות ילדים. אי אפשר.
אני חושבת שאפילו
But in bereavement work, יש הרבה דברים דומים שעושים עם ילדים, שנשענים על אותן העקרונות, בלי לקרוא לזה בודהיזם.
נכון, נכון, נכון.
עושים כמה דברים דומים.
כן. So we only have 15 minutes before we need to break, 20 minutes, so let's do an exercise, one exercise between you. I like to do the exercise that we did before of inquiry, all right? Inquiry, Chakira, Chakira in pairs, the same as we did before. Whereas before, yesterday, we did this with a repeating question, where do you feel Chaser Li Bayit? What is for you the experience of Chaser Bayit? Now, let's do the opposite. Where is for you the experience? What is for you the experience of refuge, yeah. So now to get it deeper, this is a good exercise. Just to the kalef, כמו אמרתי קודם, התרגיל הזה באופן מילולי, the kalef את השכבות. So where is for you refuge? What is for you refuge? And you could say, my house is my refuge. Fine. My family is my refuge. Fine. But then if you ask again, okay, where is your refuge? Well, you've used up house, I've done the house, I've done the family, it's going to come to here. All right, so, but don't forget, I mean, I think one of...
Where?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. Well, I don't mean where physically, but, so what? Okay, ma... What is a better way? What is for you refuge? I noticed one or two of you yesterday maybe didn't understand quite. This is not dialogue. One, the person asking the question, just ask the question. Ein dialog ben shnei anashim. What is for you refuge? Toda, you can say when the person has answered, Toda, what is for you refuge? Toda, what is for you refuge? Okay, so it's not a dialogue, but it's short, 10 minutes.
Same couple.
You can choose, do what you like, as you like. Maybe change around, it's maybe nicer to change, yeah. And we're no longer pairs, I think. Yeah, so
maybe
if you like, if you feel like, but not if you don't feel like. You feel like?
Especially to be the question.
You have to be both. You'll have to be both. You can't be in it. Okay, I'll keep the time. Yeah, I think that you when we come back from lunch, you do your bit of therapy. So
can you do me a favor?
Mm.
Call my phone.
Okay.
And say that we're running a bit late, so that we're finishing 1:25 or something.
Okay.